Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Hi, I'm Masaba Gupta. Each week on How I Masaba from Luminary, I talk to one incredible woman about how they do, well, them. These are the inspirational mindsets, necessary daily practices, and only funny in hindsight experiences that have defined and continue to drive our culture's greatest. I don't know about you, but in the last few years, I feel like there's so much going on. Well, I mean, we've lived through a pandemic, wars, impending recession, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. The other day, someone told me that the Collins Dictionary word of the year for 2022 is permacrisis, which refers to an extended period of instability and insecurity. Can't say I'm surprised. And news travels so fast. You hear about it on your social media before it reaches traditional news. Anytime I log into my Instagram or Twitter, it's just a barrage of information. And let's not even get into how much of what we see online is sometimes fake news. How do you even keep up, right? My guest today is someone who has been a guiding light in these times. She is a pioneer for independent, ethical journalism in a time where we needed it the most, through a medium that makes it accessible and relatable, and most importantly, relevant. Today, I'm talking to Faye D'Souza. This is one question, the first question that I've been meaning to ask you forever. So whenever I see your post on social media, you know, sometimes it says trigger warning.
Yes.
And, you know, sometimes there's uncomfortable news, there's sad news, there's, you know, shocking news, whatever it is. I just feel like while you're always protecting us from the triggers, what's protecting you? What's your... Do you have like an unmute button? What is your sort of... How do you not get triggered?
So part of it is also just habit of being in the system and just dealing with. But I remember we started using the triggers also during COVID.
Okay.
Because that's when I realized what sort of an impact news was having on people. And I also realized that a lot of people are on Instagram to avoid.
Yeah, it's their escape.
The hard stuff, right?
Correct.
But I remember crying during COVID because of the kind of information I was taking. Bodies floating in the river, people dying. I remember this one visual. There was an ambulance that was rolling out of a hospital and made a turn. And the back of the ambulance opened and the bodies just rolled out onto the street.
Oh my God.
These were bodies that were, you know, wrapped in like those black bags. They were fully wrapped. You couldn't see who it was. But they just tumbled out of the ambulance because the back, you know, door just opened. Then there were all of these stories that kept coming up about people not being able to cremate loved ones because of the lines at the crematoriums.
And abandoned bodies.
Abandoned bodies. Yeah. I spent a lot of time in hospitals in the first wave.
Okay.
In Mumbai. We went to KEM, we went to Sion, we went to all these hospitals to come face to face with the loss, with what the doctors were going through, what the nurses were going through. It was hard. I had team members who were really struggling. Okay. As well, from a mental health point of view, to just deal with all of that input. And it's hard. A lot of times I have to just like breathe, step away. You know, sometimes, and when I was in television, I used to get really angry. So there are some things that really get under my skin. Right?
Yeah.
Crime of a sexual nature.
Exactly, yeah. As you a know, woman,
rape,
I'm sure.
Gang rape, children. Rape of children really bothers me. It really, really bothers me. But I'm trying to teach myself, and it's an everyday thing, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to teach myself that you feel your feelings and then breathe it out. But yeah. It doesn't go in the work, which is a really difficult thing to do. So I try and compartmentalize.
Okay.
So for example, when I'm working. Mm-hmm. And then if I'm with my child or if I'm with my dog, and really during the pandemic, my dog was a huge release.
I can imagine.
Because I would walk her and, you know, put my phone away and not look at my phone at that time.
Yeah.
But it's hard. I mean, I don't shy away from talking about it. Mm-hmm. I've regularly had like mental health breakdowns, have had to. Mm. So I have my therapist on call, and I call him and say, I need a session, I need to talk. Yeah. Sometimes just over the phone, sometimes a video call does the trick. Sometimes I have to go in person and spend some time.
Okay.
But I think over the years I've realized, and this is a really important thing for me, realized when I need to pick up that phone, make that call and say, hey, I need a session. And that, I think, is the important bit.
And I think the awareness that you have, that you need to do that and you actively do it, I think that's incredible. No, that's amazing. But
because, I've realized if we don't do it, we wind up letting it out in wrong ways. Right?
Yeah.
So either you take it out on family members, you're cranky and you take it out on the people who work with you.
Yeah.
It's really not fair to anyone. We just need to learn how to sort of process our stuff. And I find this really interesting. So mental health was not a big topic of discussion till, say, about 5 years ago.
Maybe three. Yeah.
What were we doing before that? What were our parents doing?
Wow. Yeah. One of the things that you do so well is that you ask really powerful people some difficult questions, right? That's one of your key things to do. So I always wonder if after an interview, you and your guests tend to put that conversation behind you and just say, okay, these were two professionals doing their job and now we're back to our human selves. Does that ever happen or does it get worse?
So it depends. There have been some people who took it personally and who, don't talk to me even now.
Oh, no.
So I am a persona non grata for a lot of people. So I don't get interviews because... We live in a world where people like to give interviews to people who are friendly, to friendlies who will ask friendly questions.
Ask me the nice stuff.
The nice stuff, right? So there's a lot of that. Mm-hmm. But many a times, there is an understanding that, and I always start off saying, hey, I'm going to be tough. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of tough questions and I'm going to ask them. And you can choose. I mean, my point is always, you can always choose not to answer.
Thanking my stars that I'm not in the opposite chair where Faye D'Souza is asking me questions right now. Yeah, but I also feel like a lot of people must have asked you, what's your most sort of, what must have been your hardest interview? But I want to ask you, what was your easiest interview ever? Where you feel like doors were open, there were no guards up.
So there was one interview that I really enjoyed. It was not like hard journalism. So it was an easier interview.
Like a chat. Yeah.
Jeffrey Archer was in town.
Wow.
Yeah. And I pulled, I worked very hard to have him come into the studio.
Okay.
And we spent a little over an hour talking. It was live the whole time. And he was hilarious. And it was just such a, and he talked about his process and how he writes and, where the stories come from. And he's a really genuinely funny person. Mm-hmm. So it was... if you were to ask me to think back, that's the first thing that comes to my head.
Just easy, open.
Yeah, he told me that he apparently uses a typewriter, even today.
Wow.
And he doesn't have a chart of his novel ready when he starts writing. He just wakes up in the morning and just writes.
And it just forms itself.
Yes.
How incredible.
And sometimes he has to throw some portions of it out, but first of all, typewriter.
How organic. No, we keep saying organic. That's organic right there.
Yeah, yeah. That's amazing, right?
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. But what is it that you look forward to in an interview the most? And one of the things I'm noticing now is that how you read the room. Do you read people? Are you able to read people? Are you able to walk into a room and sense that, okay, the energy today is off or it's on?
So it depends. See, if it is a journalistic interview, then my preoccupation until the interview starts is to know as much about the subject at hand as the person I'm talking to. Because journalistically, you should not be caught off guard. So if, for example, that guest is telling you something that's factually untrue, you should be able to catch it because you know all the facts. That's the only way to qualify and prepare to do an interview is to just know everything. So the amount of research that has to go into it, and you have to sort of try and figure out every answer to every question that you're going to get. So you have your counter answers
Correct.
Ready. So I'll ask question number one. If this is the answer, then this is my question number two.
Yeah.
But if B is the answer, then that is my question number two.
Wow.
Because you have to also react to what that person is saying, and you have to just remember everything offhand as much as possible. Mm-hmm. That's journalistically. From a non-journalistic interview, so like a podcast interview, something like that, for me, it's really important to get the other person to a point where they're being authentic and they're just really freely talking about
their life. Do you feel like when you sort of drop your guard as the journalist and become the human Faye, do you feel like that helps the person in front open up?
Yeah. I also have another trick I'll share with
you.
So normally what happens in any interview, you ask a question. The person will give you the expected answer. And then you just pause and wait.
Oh, like, I'm so grateful.
No. So basically, I'll ask you about being a designer.
Yeah,
What's your process? So you'll say something.
Yeah.
Then I pause and wait for you to continue. And then when you continue, that's when you get the real answer.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Because then you just, so you've said what the first thing that came to your head.
Yeah.
And then I pause and let you talk some more.
Yeah.
That's when the real stuff comes out.
Like, that is stressful because Lady Masaba here has no pauses whatsoever. I'm not even giving you the opportunity, but do please stop me if I'm not. Now tell me, you've made a very, very clear choice to leave all the major news networks and just take on a path of your own, build something for yourself. You have an audience, a very dedicated one, like myself, who thinks you're credible.
Yay!
And you're doing lovely work. And everyone, my DMs are filled with your posts being shared half the time. Do you see a difference now in the way you present the news because you don't have the pressure of being with the big
guys? Oh, 100%. 100%. There's no pressure, right? In fact, today, and a lot of the people I work with, even today, are people who are with me in the channel, like the person who does my makeup and hair, a couple of my colleagues, Ira, you met her outside, used to work with me in the channel. So a lot of these guys, still work with me. They also left. So one of them was telling me that, you look so much more relaxed now than you did, when you were with the channel. Because I'm not carrying the burden of, an entire organization and all of those employees and the competition of constantly being ahead of somebody else. So I actually am able to decide how much we want to do. Able to prioritize quality over quantity, able to prioritize quality over speed. And I mean, as arrogant as this sounds, I need to tell you what you need to know. And there's that filter, right? Okay, so this has happened. Does Masaba need to know this? Maybe she does, maybe she doesn't. If she doesn't need to know, we will not tell you. So again, we're not
How
giving
do you,
you
make
like
that choice.
I'm not giving you 100 stories a day.
Yeah,
example.
You're filtering them. Yeah.
I'm filtering them and giving you things that I feel are important for you to know. So you feel as a citizen better informed.
Mm.
You feel like you know what's going on in the world, but it's also not inundating you, right?
Yeah.
It's not like 100 stories of like...
And it's good
you
English.
You need to know this, you need to...
It's grammatically correct news.
We do make our errors, though.
You do.
I must say, we make our errors. But this is something that I spend a lot of time explaining to people. All journalism is run by human beings.
Yeah.
And so you will always have human error.
Correct.
Right? But the difference between good journalism and bad journalism is that good journalism will apologize and account for that error, saying, hey, you know what? We made a mistake. I'm really sorry. This is what it should have been. Because I shouldn't allow you to believe something that is untrue. Because I made a mistake.
That's your responsibility.
You have to quickly say, hey, listen, this was wrong. This is not true. Bad journalism exaggerates, misinforms, misleads the audience on purpose and never apologizes.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Yes. Okay, let's talk about you, the journalist, we know. You, the entrepreneur, right? Mm. Responsible for your own revenue now, for the reach of your channels on various platforms, all of that, brand partnerships, etc., etc. What's the most surprising part of the journey for you?
GST.
Friends, GST it is.
GST. So, you know, for me, GST aside, and that can be a whole thing. So, one of the people I have, and I'm not saying this because you're sitting in front of me, mm-hmm. but one of the people I've always admired as an entrepreneur is you.
Thank you.
Because of the energy with which you are freaking constantly launching shit, dude.
Dude, I'm literally like on one leg right now, but I will launch a damn product if I have to.
Yeah, man. I mean, like, you know, I know what it takes.
Yeah.
Especially when it's a, you know, it's sort of an individual driven organization, which you are. It has to come from you constantly, right? You have to wake up in the morning and say, aaj kya launch kar rahe? Because if you don't do it, nothing will get launched. And to have the energy to keep pushing stuff out there, because it takes, like, when you are an organization, mm-hmm. everybody, like, for example, I've worked in corporate India, right?
Correct.
So everybody has their own motives. Somebody wakes up and does their own shit in the morning, and then for 3 days, if you don't like light a fire under people's butt cheeks, nothing happens. It's fine.
There's lunch breaks that just go into tea breaks that go into
And it's okay. But when it's an organization, it runs on your energy constantly.
Yeah.
That for me has been the big surprise, because I'm not a great micromanager.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not great at sort of like I like to sort of.
You like to delegate.
I like to delegate. Mm. I like to encourage people. I like to tell them how amazing they are, but I'm not a bean counter. I'm really bad at counting beans, both in terms of GST and also in terms of how many edits did you do today.
Oh, you're
especially,
not that person.
I'm not that person. Especially, and for me, people are working from home mm-hmm. because we don't have an office. So I don't have eyes.
Like, but who's that person on days that you can't be that person? Because we all have our days, right? Especially as women.
Yeah.
There's some days I wake up and I'm like, man, I just cannot. But I do think that the reason I've been able to survive for the last 12 years is because
you have other people who do it for
you. No. I mean, that, of course. But I feel like I have this switch inside of me. No matter how I'm feeling, I show up.
Mm.
At least I show up.
Mm.
But what happens when you don't want to show up? Is there somebody, like with me, I know I have my business head, Sagar, who is there. He's like a rock. You know, he will hold fort when I'm not in a position to hold fort. Who's holding fort for Faye D'Souza when she's not being able to hold fort?
So, incidentally, my partner's name is Sagar.
Wow, it's Sagar Day.
My husband's name is Sagar. Okay. I think of him more as a partner. He's half his brain is constantly dedicated to just sort of figuring out where my career is going, which is really amazing.
That's
precious. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And he's constantly pushing, saying, hey, you should do this, you should do this. Have you seen this? Have you seen this? You should push this, you should put this. And especially now with the baby, there's a part of me that's constantly distracted mm-hmm. as opposed to when I could go to an office and just completely focus and not
shut the world off.
Not care about what time I'm going home today. Mm-hmm. So it's good. I mean, it cannot be underestimated what it takes to have someone who's thinking about, sort of mentally thinking about the
growing
direction of your career.
And
I have a great team.
Mm-hmm.
who work with me. A couple of good journalists. I have Amita, who does a lot of the writing. I have Ira, you met her outside.
Yes.
So people who are working even when I'm not there,
hmm.
Which is great. I mean, because it takes a village really to,
yeah,
to make
but
these
that's
things.
That's good that it's on autopilot almost. I feel like the best organizations, the best, you know, teams just are on autopilot. Just process driven. They do what they have to no matter what the day is like.
Yes, yes.
Now, building any business, and I prime example of this, is a process that comes with its ups and downs, a roller coaster, right? And I think people underestimate how much of a roller coaster it is.
It is.
Yeah. Once you decided to take this leap of faith, what were some of the biggest sort of roadblocks and things that were coming in your way?
So, see, obviously, one of the biggest questions I had to answer in the beginning was, do we raise funds? Do we not raise funds? Right? You bring
the
in
a million-dollar question.
The million. So, actually, incidentally, we've gotten up till this. We've gotten now. We're not really big. We're a small team.
Mm-hmm.
5 people. I haven't really invested too much money in the sense that we've not raised a round. It's bootstrapped till here. This company belongs to?
Me.
Yes.
No one to be answerable to.
No one to answer to.
Hmm.
And that's always the question. Like, do we do it? Do we not do it? And, you know, we've gotten through the first nearly 3 years now, which is the tough part. Without
and
having
in a
to,
tough time. Let's point that
time.
Out.
Yeah. So now the question is, so you've gotten from 0 to 100. Do you do the investment now and take it to there? Or you figure out how to just roll this forward?
Yeah.
That for me was the big question. And I sort of just also feel these startups that raise a boatload of money and then don't actually become viable is not me. Like,
yeah.
I don't see that. You know, so for me, my worst nightmare
mm-hmm.
is hiring 200 people
mm-hmm.
and then firing 100 out of that. Do you know what I mean? So when you raise the funds and then you just like boom and then suddenly you're like, oh, we ran out of money. So now let's downsize. For me, that's like the worst thing because every relationship that I have when I work with people is personal.
Hmm.
Whether it's the person who does the makeup, whether it's the person who, you know, everything. It's personal to me.
Yeah.
So I hate to sort of do that. So I'm very, you know, I'll just cut for the cloth that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always been my personality. So,
yeah.
So as a result, what has happened is also we're not financially as large as we could possibly be.
Hmm.
It's not a bustling newsroom, which is possible if we raise the funds and did it.
Yeah.
But it's a small team working from home, sort of doing what we feel needs to be done. So that conundrum is always exists for me, right?
Yeah.
So
should we jump on the treadmill or do you stay off it?
Yeah. And I sort of feel there's a little bit of FOMO. Because
if
I had a 100-member team, I'd have just totally killed this thing, right?
Yeah.
Because there are lots of these big events that happen. Big elections happen or big things happen. Mm. And I really miss having a team of reporters. Or I really miss having like a line of editors who are like banging stuff out, you know, cutting edits and just so good.
Yeah.
I miss having a physical newsroom to run.
Like a machinery almost. Yeah. But I also feel like you're somebody who might, you know, you feel like you're accountable for the money that you take, right? You can't just take money. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's me, you know. I'm like, if someone has invested even a rupee in me, I must give it back.
Yeah.
You know, but tenfold,
right? Yeah.
So I think that's something that a lot of startups today are probably not feeling the pressure of because there is money. There is a lot of money in various industries and they're just like, we'll take it, we'll see how it goes. Some go bust, some do really well.
Yeah.
But what is the most sort of exciting thing for you right now when it comes to the world and news and India? What is the most exciting thing for you right now that you're just willing to
push out there? So I think that in that tough period of COVID, I invested a lot of time and energy building credibility. And so now we have that credibility, which in my mind is a really scarce sort of treasure.
Yeah.
Right? Especially in the environment that we're in right now. The thing that people are genuinely most afraid of is forwarding something that's untrue.
Yeah. Right? They should be.
Yeah. People just hate that. You hate to have to apologize, take something
and
down.
And delete a message that everyone's seen.
Everyone has seen. You don't want to be that person. And if we've managed to say that, okay, you know, if I read it on this handle, it's, you know, likely probably fully verified and it doesn't, you know, none of this is crap. It's a good place to be.
Yeah. Also want to ask you, in today's day and age with news, there's algorithms, there's money, there's all of that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And it affects your integrity.
Yeah.
Where do you see the future of this field as a whole?
See, there were always algorithms. Like when back in the day,
it's just
when
we got the spelling now.
Yes. Yeah. So see, back in the day when you only had a newspaper, mm-hmm, and nothing else, right? And, you know, our parents would read the newspaper end to end and believe everything that was in it. Mm-hmm. The person who was running that newspaper had a business to run. Mm-hmm. And would have to decide, you know, how to distribute, how to get more people to read my paper. What should we write that will make this paper more exciting? Should we like add some color to the front page or not to the front page? All of these things.
Yeah.
So it was always a business. Mm-hmm. And then you had your evening news that came in. And the same questions had to be asked. How much are we spending to gather this news? And are we making that much money?
Yeah.
Because if you're not making money, you can't pay salaries. If you can't pay salaries, your journalists still, I mean, all journalists have to pay rent. They have to pay school fees. Yeah. They have to run their houses, right?
Yeah.
Nobody lives on fresh air. I think what has happened over the years is that journalists became responsible for making money, which is, you know, you need to have that clean line.
Yeah, that's a bit weird. That's odd.
Yeah, because traditionally, the journalist would always be at loggerheads with the business owner.
Correct. Like you said, everyone needs money to survive. Mm-hmm. Where do you draw the line between, you know, bringing the truth to people, which is your primary job, and saying, you know what, I have to run my house, man?
You know, someone asked me this and said that, oh, you know, but if they quit television, where will they go? They'll starve. And I was like, I've gained weight since I left television. I would like to like starve.
And you're looking great, by the way. Glowing. <Yeah. laughs>
But, you know, it's possible if it's important enough to you. Mm. There are lots of journalists who have left mainstream media and are working on their own.
And it's fine.
And are fine. Mm. You have to have the guts to make that stand. And people who are, I mean, you know this. Everybody in every business knows this. Every day you are faced with choices. What you decide defines who you are.
And would that also be your advice to anyone, young kids especially, picking journalism as a career?
No, so I know that there is, you know, I spoke to someone who runs a journalism school who said, mm-hmm, that the number of enrollments has dropped. There are many reasons for that. One is the salaries are not what they should be. The job is not what it should be. I remember when I first became a journalist and, you know, you told someone, so what do you do? And I'm a journalist. And we're like, oh, nice. That's not the reaction you get anymore. So the brightest people are being, you know, pulled into other jobs.
Yeah.
They're not picking this. But it's also a calling. Mm. And if you, for young people, if you feel that this is what you want to do, do it. And believe that you can change the world. Hmm. It is really important to believe that you can change the world before you put your pants on in the morning as a journalist. Otherwise, it's a very difficult job to do.
But I also think that everyone thinks, oh, I'm just a small piece of such a large puzzle. Hmm. If I change, what changes? And I said, it's pretty amazing. You'll see how much changes if you just change.
Have you seen a jigsaw puzzle with one piece missing?
Yeah, it's incomplete. Yeah.
It's the first thing you say, there's a piece missing.
There's a piece missing.
That is so true. You make such a big difference.
Now, most of your close friends, oh my God, what's it like having close friends with doing what you do? Are they always like, Faye, what's happening in the world? Tell us now. Tell us before you tell everyone on social media.
No, Ashish, my friends don't care. my friends do various things. One of my closest friends is actually a yoga therapist who helps me breathe, which is so important. Some of my close friends used to be in television. Now they do their own thing. Mm-hmm. But I like actually sitting down and chatting with people who knew me before all of this. So we can just like be ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think for a lot of my close friends, it doesn't, what I do is not a factor.
Even the journalists who are close friends?
Yeah, even the journalists who are close friends. So a lot of times with the journalists who are close friends, we wind up talking about what's going on in the world.
Of course, yeah.
Because like I said, right, you need someone you can sort of just, and journalists need to vent, right? You need your sort of this thing to have that conversation.
Man, I'm exhausted. Yeah. That must be the conversation.
Yeah, like you couldn't, I mean, a lot of things that are happening in the world right now, we wouldn't believe.
You know, for founders like myself as well, I think it's constant learning.
Mm.
You have to constantly adapt and change to what people are asking of you, what's happening in the market. Yeah. I don't think you can be one thing, you know. And I think sometimes founders get the raw end of the deal. You know, you're just supposed to know it all, but we're also human. We're also learning. And hopefully we can take people with us and have them learn too.
You know, the difference in a corporate setup is that the person who eventually becomes CEO spends many years preparing,
correct. Right?
And all those years, they learn something new.
Yeah.
So every day you go into work, into a workspace, you learn something new about HR, you learn something new about legal, you learn something new about accounts, you learn something new about the housekeeping guys. And then eventually you become CEO and you've like, you spent your lifetime, a better part of your adult life in training. And then people who start companies in their, say, early 30s.
Or me at 19.
Or at 19, you've had no training. So you're learning on the job, right? Which means that you are going to make mistakes because then that's the only way to learn. Because there's no other example to learn from. There's there's nobody to model yourself on. There's nobody you're watching on a daily basis that you can learn from. You just have to like wing it.
Just like, and you're figuring it out as you go.
Thank you.
Was such a great conversation. I like that you plan to stay on the right side of history. Something that we should all aim for. And keep our conscience clear and keep a good eye on it.
God willing.
God willing.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
In the next episode of How I'm a Saba, I'm speaking to the world-renowned fashion designer, Anita Dongri.
You were listening to How I'm a Saba only on Luminary. The podcast is produced by Monisha Singh Katyal and Rainshine Entertainment. Ritika Bajaj is our creative producer and Palash Kulkarni is our executive producer. The research for this episode was done by Anushka Mukherjee. The mix engineer for this episode is Ankit Thakur. Artist management by Versus Entertainment LLP. The music supervisor for the episode is Ankur Srivastav. The episode was recorded at Island City Studios, Mumbai.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.